Hello everyone and welcome to another brilliant sport and lifestyle biz here on your Real Feel Good Radio, UK Health Radio. Well, we're into the first show of the month of October and that means the final quarter of 2023 already. This week we have a blockbuster for you. We have Zandara Kennedy, who's back with part two. She is a brilliant stunt driver and producer, and also is a driver and car owner for her own drift team. We then have part three from Britain's outstanding superstar of the F1 Academy, Chloe Chong. Then on to the final part from Julia Dalbart-Pusey, well-known and the star of Below Deck Mediterranean. And we finish our interviews off with Professor Green, who's back to support another cause, along with the CEO of the British Gas Energies Trust, Jessica Taplin. Add in our SLB Sports Roundup, and we've got a show that we know you're going to love. You'll never stop this, but I will never let you go. Well, who am I to say? Maybe by now you should know. You got your somebody calling. You think you're somebody, don't you? I think you're scared of keeping somebody close.
Kind of misogynistic in a sense where guys would be like, oh yeah, it makes sense, gay women are tougher, you know, they're more like men. And I think that if I was a guy, I wouldn't have experienced same acceptance in a way. I sort of made myself more male in a way that was very palatable.
Whereas I suppose if the boot was on the other foot, those sort of people would see a man as more feminine. So I can see your point. You know, it's nice that things are changing, but on to happier times. And something I've wanted to bring up, I mean, your CV, and I will say this, is truly outstanding. I tell you why. You've starred or been a part of a number of things. You've been a part of a film, a number of TV and stunt works, including a driver in the film Car Chase. You had roles in TV in Psych and a series of unfortunate events, but you've had a number of stunt works in over 85 different titles. I mean, that is just astounding. Just that on its own must make you proud. And just please tell me how those amazing experiences helped you, how they've changed you, and any that stand out.
Oh man, I mean, we are talking about over almost two decades of work. It's rare that I actually take the time to look back and go, I've achieved something here, you know? And I should be proud of it. I'm usually looking at what I have left to do, if that makes sense. But definitely so many experiences. More recently, I did some work on The Adam Project, which was a Ryan Reynolds movie for Netflix. And that was probably one of the most challenging driving jobs I've ever had to do. And there were definitely moments where, you know, in the rehearsal, there's a scene where we're driving through the forest and I'm reversing and I do like a Rockford, a reverse 180 between the trees, and it looks fake and you watch it. But, you know, they had me kind of walk it and I looked at all the trees and I went, I think this is the widest point, but I'm not kidding. I had probably 6 inches extra beyond the diagonal of the vehicle. And we did it. We were doing it with a cable cam at the same time. We did it something like 9 or 11 times.
Wow.
I think on take number 7, I like shaved a reflector off the front of the bumper, and I just had to say to them, I was like, you guys are aware I'm not a robot, right? Like, the longer we do this, the more chances there are that it might get less perfect.
I'm going to knock something.
So that was a really fun one for me. I had a really cool day many years ago. Guillermo del Toro did a show that I think ended up being called Crimson Peak in the end.
Okay.
And we did a very cool fall where Jessica Chastain throws me over a railing and I kind of like hit my back on a railing a story down and then kind of rotate. And like in the story, the girl like breaks her legs as she falls to the ground. And Guillermo wanted it all as one shot. You know, he didn't want to have to cut into and out of it. So we had to plan this shot to be all in one, and we did it on wires, but you know, we could control for a lot of factors, but we couldn't control for where my head was, which meant it was entirely up to me to not like stove my head into the second story and break my neck.
Wow.
So jobs like that, I love the challenge of them. I love Best is entirely based on a high level of presence and physical control. Yeah. That's what really drew me to the job in the first place.
I mean, that's amazing, honestly. And just you talking about it made me smile. How brave and how calculated you must be in your job. So obviously, there are going to be things even now with all your experience that are going to give you anxiety or perhaps concern. But when you first started out, there must have been, you know, times where you were like, oh my goodness, and like really anxiety. How did you overcome that? Or was it a case of, I've signed up for it, I've just got to go through with it?
I am a little bit like that. If I say I'll do something, I'm just going to do it.
Yeah.
No matter what, no matter how I feel about it in the moment. I definitely have that trait, which helps. But I've really learned to kind of coexist with my apprehension or my awareness of potential consequences, but have it be here.
You know,
like not really embodying it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But that trait, you know, especially as I started coordinating, of seeing, okay, what are all the potential ways this could go wrong so that we can mitigate them? That trait has really served me well when it comes into racing, because I have to plan for a team going across the country. Last year, I did 20,000 miles across the U.S. towing a trailer. And
wow.
Sort of spares you carry, and where is everyone going to sleep? There's so many elements. What are we going to do? There's a hurricane, which happened in the middle of last year. I had to fly into Florida and try to get my trailer out.
Oh, crikey.
Before the hurricane hit, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So I think I have really finely attuned, like, it's anxiety, but I don't think that I feel it somatically the way that some people do. I think it's just a hyper awareness of all of the potential outcomes.
Yeah, and that's fair enough. And just you mentioning the team, which we'll come on to in a minute, you clearly love and excel at what you're doing. I mean, I can tell that obviously by how successful you are, but also, as I said, your passion, you continued doing this, this, and this. You wouldn't be doing so much if you weren't enjoying it or you weren't driven, you know? So at the moment, obviously, you currently work with Drift School USA, which is great. And also, you take part in the competitive drifting, which I presume is what you're the team owner driver for.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about both of them and, like, the opportunities, how they come about.
So Drift School USA, the relationship that I have with them is a coaching relationship. So Taka has been my coach for the last 7 years. He is one of the original competitors in Formula Drift. He's still a judge in drifting. And when I really started to get serious about drifting, I started training with Taka. Now, the first thing I said, you know, early on was like, I have no intention of ever competing in Formula Drift. I never want to do that.
Yeah.
So now I'm competing in Formula Drift. The highest level of competitive drifting in the world.
Fabulous, yeah.
Now, they have two categories, and I'm in basically the second highest category.
Yeah.
There's never been a woman in the highest category, and there's never been a woman on the podium in Formula Drift history. So I earned my license in 2021, sort of not quite by accident, but in a competition. I wasn't aiming to earn my license. I just wanted to compete.
Yeah.
But when I did earn it, I was the first Canadian woman to do so, and I didn't see any other Canadian women anywhere close to being able to achieve it. And to me, that felt like, oh, I have no choice here, right?
Yeah.
Like, my future is chosen. I just need to figure out how to prepare for it now.
Yep.
Because this door I never expected to open in front of me,
yes.
And I'm not the kind of person that walks by open doors.
No. I was going to say, knowing you, you said there was no woman been on the podium and no woman been in the first category. I was going to say, well, that's not going to be for long. I imagine you're going to do whatever you can to achieve both of them, which would be amazing, wouldn't it?
When I see something like that, it is motivating. You know,
yeah.
It's also daunting, right? It puts a lot on the line all the time. I feel that the stakes I impose upon myself are much higher than maybe what they actually are.
Yeah.
But, you know, I want to achieve that. I feel like anything less than that would make me not worthy of support, which is, you know, a whole other thing and probably quite typical for people with my mindset. But
It's pretty harsh on yourself, to be fair, but I get you're the sort of in person that if you are not challenging yourself, you're not satisfied, which means you're probably not going to be performing at your best anyway.
No, that's very true.
So it's a good thing, but, you know, it's one of them things that you've got to be doing what you're doing at a high level for as long as you can.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So just being a team owner wouldn't be enough, if that makes sense. You're the sort of people in the world that we do need. We want to support. We want to help. Because I still think the best teams that work together are people that are good at different things that can marry together. Yeah, as I said, your passion and everything is just fabulous. So, yeah, that's great. Now moving on a little bit, just tell us what your plans, your hopes and your dreams are for the future.
Well, we've touched on it a little bit. Yeah. I definitely want to be the first woman on a podium in Formula Drift. I want to be the first woman to make it to the pro level of Formula Drift as opposed to Pro Spec, where I compete now.
Yep.
I have some, like, women's-only events that I would like to host. On a kind of lighter note, I really want to do a women's-only drift competition that has male umbrella girls, you know?
Oh, you know, why not?
It's funny to me that the Umbrella Girl is still such a part of the motorsport industry, where very few other industries would have that. And you know, I kind of want to flip that on its head. I think a lot of the guys are quite lighthearted and don't take themselves too seriously. Quite a fun sort of juxtaposition, and also just a look at, why is this industry like this?
I think you'd probably have a queue out the door, wouldn't you, to audition for it? Hopefully there are enough women around, and I don't mean that disrespectfully, because as you said, doors aren't always open for women. You know, your talent and your ability and your passion have opened some, but you still have to kick a few in, I imagine, to get where you are.
That's very true, and I do think in the last decade, the amount of women in drifting has changed. There have always been more and more and more of them, so I love that they are feeling like it's a more welcoming environment, and there are other women who have also really taken up the cause of doing these women-only events, and really creating a supportive environment for women, which is something that I really love and support.
That's fabulous to hear. And just finally for us, the interview is more inspirational than what I actually thought. Could you give some advice to any young girls that want to either get into driving, stunt work, motorsport, please?
Well, definitely the advice that I'm going to start with is the advice that I've heard from veteran stunt people, which is if you can do anything else, do that. It's not going to be easy. It isn't easy to chase your passion in a meaningful way. And the hours are long and the heartbreaks are huge. The costs are high, but the rewards are higher, you know? Yeah. So as long as you're emotionally prepared for that, people do notice presence and hard work. And while talent is one thing, the ability to see what's happening in a space, be respectful, be helpful, those skills actually go a long way towards any career that you try to build and any relationships that you end up building in the future without realizing it at the time. I would say invest everything you have, because that's probably what it'll take.
Yeah, it is dangerous as well. Let's not get away from the fact that what you do is a very dangerous job. You not only have to be highly skilled, you do have to be committed and brave as well.
And there's an element of luck. You know, there really is. But I would just say, you know, all it takes is everything. But if that's a price that seems worth paying to you, then there's definitely, it's achievable.
Yeah, that's an amazing bit of advice, because I think any sport or anything in life that you want to excel at, you have to commit everything to it. So sadly, we've come to the end of today's interview. It's been absolutely brilliant, Zandara, honestly. And perhaps once you've got your busy month out of the way, we can get you on again and you can actually give us a full explanation about what drifting is. We've seen it in the movies, Fast and Furious and that. We've seen parts of drifting, and there's probably better examples as well. But it would be great to hear, if you don't mind, just the techniques and the technical bits of driving it. Get your busy month out of the way. I want to say good luck for this month. You said you'd be living on the road for the next month and in four different states, I think, as well. So good luck with that. And for today's interview, Zandara Kennedy, I just want to say thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Likewise. Thank you very much.
Thank you. One thing you did mention in your answer then was that you're not sure if it was right. You compared yourself at that point against the other girls. I actually feel that that is a good thing to do at times, because especially in a sport where you're going to get more and more series or races or championships that are just for girls, they're popping up more and more because obviously we're trying to push these things. Obviously not probably at the same level as football yet. So it is a good marker to have sometimes. So I think that was a really good thing that you did.
I think, I agree to an extent. I think it was something that I needed to do at the time.
Yeah. Like,
if I didn't do that, then I'd kind of be putting myself down, just thinking, why aren't I adapting this quickly to a different engine or a different track? But to really put into perspective, I guess, who I was racing against, my level of racing compared to theirs, it kind of boosted morale for that fit that I needed to. Because I remember that weekend that we were driving in the rain, and I just couldn't figure out the rain tyres in this category. But you've got to just remember, I've got less experience, I don't know this car, but I'm doing so well against these drivers that do know this car.
Yeah.
So I agree, I think it was definitely the right thing to do at that time.
Yes, it's good to check in occasionally, you know, to see where you are. And just for me, like, I refer to the Mazda MX Cup 5 Series. That's why every race they have a cash award for the top rookie and for the top female, because they appreciate that people are at different experiences. And I don't think there's a difference between boys and girls, but sometimes some girls drive still with a bit of intimidation. I'm not saying you do, but some girls would do. Do you know what I mean? So I think it's a good thing. But as you also pointed out, it's something that you just do to check where you are yourself in your career, and then you go back to where I am in my series. So that's really good. In 2022, you competed in the British Kart Championship X30 Junior, which is great, and you were part of the FIA Girls Rising Stars, and you were a finalist. I mean, that's amazing. And it must have given you a huge sense of achievement, really.
Yeah, I think the Rising Stars was the one thing that really turned my career upside down in a good way.
Yeah.
You know, I never expected that opportunity and for it to come about. And I remember going into it and thinking, you know what, there's no way I'm going to get through. I might as well just enjoy it as much as I can. And that's what I did. I enjoyed it as much as I can and tried to take aboard as many things as I could. And I remember just doing my own thing, not focusing on others. Sometimes I had a hard time adapting because obviously it was my first time in a proper car.
Yes.
But when I put my head to it and I just settled into enjoyment, it really all just came together. And the result was just a result of, I guess, enjoying it. And going to the finals in Maranello is an unforgettable experience. You know, being under the wing of Ferrari for a week was amazing. And to drive such an iconic track as Pista di Fiorano.
Yeah.
Yeah, something that I'll never forget, you know. And I'm forever thankful for that experience that the FIA Women's Commission gave us, because without that, I don't think I'd be in this position I am today.
No, I mean, fabulous. And as we come to the end of your karting period, which makes you sound very old, but you're not, you're very, very young. Karting was very good to you, Chloe, you know, it was amazing. Do you have a favourite or a best race that you can remember?
There was a lot of good races, a lot of good podiums, but actually, one that really stuck out to me was one in 2021 in Rotax.
Yeah.
I wasn't having the greatest of seasons by anything at all, but I remember going into this race, and it wasn't an important race per se. It was more pre-round for the British Championship, which was coming up, I think, in a couple weekends' time. So there's all those drivers there. I think there was like 40 drivers. And it was my very first race at that park.
Yeah.
Didn't expect anything. You know, I had a couple okay races and then got pushed off in the last heat. So it meant I had, I think, 23rd in the final or something like that. And just before the final, it started raining really hard. So we all put on rain tyres and all that. Went out, didn't know what to do because obviously, like, I'd never driven there in the rain, really.
Yeah.
And I went from 23rd to 4th.
Wow.
In, like, 10 minutes of racing. That was something that I will never forget just because I've never came from so far back.
Yeah.
And finished that high up in such a competitive grid. So
yeah, fabulous.
I think having the adversity of being pushed off as well really like puts that experience further up because obviously I was in a really bad mood afterwards and to be able to come back, maybe get 20th because in that class it was really hard to overtake. So that race forever sticks in my mind and I think really boosted my confidence, especially against the boys who are quite aggressive in that category.
Wonderful memory, and perhaps something I think you can always lean back on, memory, you know, if you ever need to pull something out the memory bank. And now we move on to probably what must be the highlight for you. You were selected to drive in the inaugural F1 Academy. What can you say?
That was probably the biggest moment of my career so far. I never expected to drive in F1 Academy. In fact, I was preparing for another karting season, actually at the time that I got called. So to get that, I guess, late announcement was really cool, and I kind of had to put everything aside, my GCSEs, everything that I've been planning for the year and my whole life really aside, just, you know, commit to what I really want to do in my dream, really. And to race with Prema was also amazing. I never expected to one race in F1 Academy and two race for such a cool and decorated team. So been a hell of an experience. Learned so much, especially from the teammates that I have with a lot of experience, Martin Bianca. And it's an experience that I'll forever be grateful for. I think it really helps put together some building blocks for hopefully what's yet to come and my future career in racing.
Amazing. I mean, you just touched on it there. To be selected by Prema, which is, as you said, amazingly decorated, very highly thought of, have drivers like Marta as a teammate. I mean, must have been fabulous. But for me, what makes it even more special is the massive step up just straight into the F1 Academy. How did you actually feel? Was there a little bit of nerves, a little bit of trepidation, as well as a mixture of confidence?
I think there was quite a bit of nerves, like, before the start of the testing season. Once testing kicked off, I really realised that we had pace, and it was kind of like I felt like I wasn't on the limit because I was still quite scared of the car, you could say, and scared of the newly found speed. But we were like 9th or 10th consistently, and that was better than where I wanted to be at the start of the season. So I came into the first race with a lot of confidence. I think that really paid off, the fact that I wasn't really pushing my limits, but I was still quite quick. And yeah, it just felt quite put together. And after that little hiccup, I guess, at the start of the season where I didn't really have that confidence, I just came into the season and thinking about myself, thinking about, you know what, I'm the only one without experience. I'm probably expected to finish last.
Right.
So anything better than last and improvement is my goal, really. And I really just engraved that into my head and it's really stuck with me.
And that's a totally whole different mindset, isn't it? In any form of sport, is if you're going into it thinking, yeah, I've got a chance of winning this, to I'm probably expected to come last. That doesn't mean you're being negative or defeatist. You know, it is a different mindset to deal with.
Yeah, I think obviously for a lot of us coming up from karting, and I've heard it from other drivers actually in the series, is that when you go into cars, there's always a bit of shock because it's so different.
Yeah.
And you see yourself on the time sheet maybe a lot lower than you thought you would be in terms of the karting rankings.
Yeah.
So it's that mental difficulty of just getting over it and being able to start fresh, start at the bottom and slowly work yourself up, really. I think that was probably a hard thing this year, especially being in such a big spotlight, you could say, and people judging you off of, I guess, the result on paper but not the backstory, because not a lot of people really consider the fact that you're starting from the bottom, starting where a lot of the drivers in the grid started maybe 2 years back.
Yeah.
And you can't, like for me and a lot of people in racing, we know that you can't mix those timelines, really. There's a lot of consideration, a lot of stuff that goes on behind the scenes. For example, what goes on in testing, how much testing you're getting in secret.
Yeah.
The training, the money that you're putting in. So a lot of factors to play. And I think obviously it's been a lot tougher with the public having a lot of viewage and being able to see me from the beginning. Maybe that's not been so nice to me, but ultimately it's something that I don't want to pay a lot of attention to. And I think we did a good job of proving people wrong at the start of that season.
Absolutely. Brilliant.
UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, aunt and deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
Strawberries and cream.
Once upon a time, human slavery was just a fact of life. Right now, animal abuse is often considered normal. In time, it won't be. Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living.
Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
The station that makes you feel good.
That it's also the cost for the hire of the boat. Now, I know if you've got $500,000 in the bank, you wouldn't spend $500,000 on hiring a boat, but it's still relative, isn't it? You know, it's still very expensive to hire out the boat. So, but you guys do work, as you said, non-stop. So some of the tips look really good, you know, 25, 30,000, 20,000, massive tips.
What the kind of rule of thumb is, it's like going for table service. So you should leave a tip between 10 and 20%. So that's how they work on a yacht. So that's kind of the rule of thumb there.
Thank you for that and a good explanation. Yeah. So going back to the show again, or staying with the show, can you tell us a couple of funnier moments that you had? But also, you don't have to mention names, obviously, a couple of cringe moments that you thought, oh, crikey.
It's going back a few years now, and, and I've tried to think about this. I think when I was on it, I almost took it a little bit too seriously, and I think if I was to do it again, which I won't because, you know, obviously...
Done that.
I would have taken it more as a laugh now, I think. And also, I think because the show's been running for so long, the crew have almost had chance to look at previous seasons, and I'm sure some of them are upping the ante a little bit. I'm sure they're a bit more freer and liberal than maybe we were kind of 8-10 years ago. But the funnier moments, I can't particularly think of anything too funny. I mean, seeing Daniel going up on the donkey as he got sacked was quite hilarious.
Yeah, I remember
that. I didn't want to poke fun at him, but I was like, I wouldn't have even agreed to get on that.
Wasn't he told the cable cars were broken or something? I think
probably I would have been like, no, I'm getting my backpack and I'm walking.
Yeah,
so that was quite funny. We had quite a mixture on our crew. Bobby always made me laugh because he's goofy and, you know, he is who he is. But I love being with Hannah. We could always have a giggle. The most cringe bit is when you watch it back for the first time. you don't get to see it really far in advance of the viewers.
Okay.
So he's a bit petrifying. You're thinking, oh my gosh, why did I say that? Or why did I do this? But you have to just go with the flow and hope that it's edited okay.
Sometimes you do give a natural reaction, which is what I prefer to watch. And you made a really good point actually at the start when you said that crews do look at previous episodes, and you get the ones that are like, I'm not going to do that, I'm going to make sure I do this, and then you get others, oh, if I play up a bit there, do you know what I mean? So thank you for that. That was good. And I do remember the donkey incident. That was quite funny. You mentioned Bobby and Hannah. Are they two people that you're still friends with? And are there any other crew members that you are?
So I only really talked to Hannah still. Okay. We talked the other week, had a little catch up. But really, that's it. I wasn't going to become best buddies with everyone.
No, of course not. Especially when you're thrown in, probably not really knowing anybody, into that such intense environment as well. It must be quite difficult.
Exactly. And I do think production do pick particular people to wind each other up. Or do you know who are going to grate against each other, because you're casted, aren't you, onto the yacht, and they must have to fulfill certain criteria, like we want this kind of person, we want that kind of person, and you know that they're going to grate against each other. So
I think you're right. It's almost a bit like how Big Brother, I think, used to be. They used to put people in there either had a history against each other, or they knew had totally different strong opinions on the same subject. And you know, some of the people who get onto Below Deck, not some, actually very few. One guy on the American one went, I lied on my resume, and he'd done one charter or something. Surely they would have researched that before they let him on the boat, you know?
Exactly.
You take it as it is, don't you? It's a show as well, isn't it? We'll now move on to after Below Deck. And since then, you've set up your own business, which is lovely. Please tell us the name of it, what the products are, and what the actual concept of the business is.
Yeah, so it's called Myrtle and Maud, and that's named after my grandmother and my husband's grandmother.
Okay.
And we specialise in natural products for the pregnancy journey. Basically, we do different teas for different trimesters, vitamins. We actually niche in morning sickness. So we do kind of natural sweets infused with B6, which is to help kind of...
Okay.
So yeah, we set that up about 7 years ago, and it's been going well.
Yeah, and that's fabulous. Did you find then that during COVID, your business probably wasn't affected as much as others because people couldn't go to the doctors or they couldn't go to the hospital, and you were approached for that basis?
Yeah, so through COVID, our sales went up, and I think mainly because, like you said, we're an e-commerce business.
Yeah.
So people were coming direct to us, and they obviously couldn't go into places like Boots or, you know, retailers. So yeah, we did see an uptick there. But apparently there wasn't a baby boom in COVID.
Really?
There was. Actually, I think it's dropped. So to everyone's amazement, it went the other way.
Yeah, everything's going well with the business. It's going forward.
Yeah, definitely. The kind of concept for it actually came from me working on the yachts. I made acupressure wristbands for travel sickness, and I was selling them online at the time.
Okay.
And then I had women approach me saying, have you got anything for morning sickness? Can you send them really quickly? And I kind of looked into the niche, and there was nothing out there natural to help them with morning sickness. So I kind of came up with this idea, and we've been going from strength to strength, really, for the last kind of 7 years. So we've had to strip things back a little bit. We launched into a big retailer, and I'd say that was kind of one of the hardest, toughest things we've ever done, and it was demanding, and I think maybe we stretched ourselves a little too far. So we are kind of stripping back a bit and actually focusing on the digital side of things at the minute.
So obviously you set that up for several reasons, especially as you said, you spotted a gap in the market. So you've moved on since, you're married. Obviously family life's treating you well, and we understand there's congratulations in order as well.
Yes, I'm currently 21 weeks pregnant.
Amazing.
It's been of a journey to get here, but we got there in the end. Well, hopefully we get a healthy little baby at the end of it.
That'll be lovely. If you don't mind, we'll check in with you and see how things are going. That'll be lovely. We'll finish off today then. Jules, it's been an amazing pleasure. You've been exactly as I thought, down to earth, bubbly, fun, honest, which is great. Could you just finish off by giving us a little bit of advice for the young people who either want to get working on boats or even set up their own business?
Yeah, definitely. We'll go with the yachts. So basically, if it's for a stewardess, get as much hospitality experience under your belt, go and work in a bar, go and work in a hotel, just get that under your belt and get it on your CV. You can do your STC W95 in the UK, get that under your belt. Anything else like silver service, you know, driving a tender, get it under your belt, and then get yourself a plane ticket and get to the south of France, get day working, walk the dock. There's crew houses there that you can go and stay in, so everyone's kind of in the same boat. And basically sign up with the agencies and just try and get work. But it is fierce, the competition is fierce, so really get your CV in preparation, years in advance to actually going to do it.
Brilliant. Well, it's a shame because I think we've come to the end of the time for today. I'd love to have you on again, perhaps closer to the birth and how things are going for you, because I'm sure we'll get a lot of hits for this, and I'm sure we'll get a lot of questions that I didn't ask that I forgot. So I just want to say for today's interview, Julia Dalbert-Pusey, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, John. It's been good.
With me today, I'm joined by two amazing people. They are joining together to try and help the anxiety and mental health of the country. It's a huge welcome back to Professor Green and also to Jessica Taplin. Hi guys, how are you?
Very good,
thank you.
So you guys are here, as I said, warm welcome back to Steve, and thank you very much for coming back and helping out another cause, and to Jessica. Mm-hmm. It's about the anxiety of many people, obviously, that are feeling anxious about the energy prices and going into the winter. Could you just briefly tell us a little bit about what you're doing and what you're trying to achieve?
Of course, yeah. So the British Gas Energy Trust have conducted some research which has revealed that more than a quarter, 27% of adults in Britain are struggling with their mental health because of the cost of living crisis, which rises to 70% of all 18 to 24-year-olds and 52% of 25 to 34-year-olds, which is quite a staggering set of figures. I mean, obviously, there's people behind those figures, right, which is what I like to use my voice for, to engage with and to talk to. But it's pretty scary because you think about young adults at 18 to 24 years old, they're coming out of education, either going into work or further education, and feeling paralysed by fear because of the cost of living crisis, which is obviously going to impact their mental health. There's enough anxiety around being that age anyway, isn't there? Not knowing what to do, making all the silly mistakes that you should have the luxury to make. But in the instance of these kids, clearly they don't, because they're so worried about pending bills. Yeah. It's really quite frightening. So we're here to really highlight the support available by way of British Gas Post Office pop-ups in the communities that are most in need, which we know by way of research, and the British Gas Energy Trust.
Thank you for that. Just to touch on something you said there, Stephen, is that most people would think it would apply more to elderly people because obviously they get cold, they don't want to put the heating on as much. But it's an interesting point that you bring up how many people of a young age are affected stepping out into the world for their first time. It must be quite a strain on them.
Definitely. But then, you know, as I understand it, as Jessica's told me, people that access this fund largely are in the age bracket of 35 to 55.
Right, okay.
Which, that's why I think it's so important to highlight for people of a younger age, because this support exists for them as well.
Yeah.
Also, it is, I think, really, really important, because I think a lot of people are quite nervous about seeking help.
Yeah.
They don't necessarily know where to seek help, and quite often you don't want to, do you? You feel like it's a burden on you. And so what we really want to do is encourage people to access help and go out to their local post office if there's a pop-up and actually just speak to another person about it.
Definitely. It's really important too. And, you know, when someone can look at your state of play for you without the emotional attachment to it, they can just take a pragmatic approach to sorting through things and sorting things out. It's a lot easier than perhaps the panic that you feel just by opening a letter.
Yeah, I understand. Obviously, you don't know what's in the letter, which is a great point. Jessica, you pointed out that people are sometimes not scared or loath, perhaps, to ask for help. I think it's perhaps in our nature that we see it. I don't know whether it's some kind of failure or you don't want to hear the outcome because we are sad and thinking bad of it. Tell us a little bit about what the pop-ups can offer.
Absolutely. So the British Gas Energy Trust, to start with, we're a separate independent charity and we work in two ways. We fund money and energy advice charities on the front line in local communities. And that's really important because those charities know their communities. They've been embedded in them for a long time. They understand the nuances. We fund 45 of those, but they're not in every community. So we've identified 11 communities which are particularly in need this winter. And we are working with local charities to make sure that there are advisors on the ground in the high street. Until at the end of March, actually, there's going to be 50 pop-ups.
Wow, that's great news. Stephen, coming back to you, your first interview went off the charts with us, easily over 7 figures every week, which is great. And for people who actually didn't hear that, just tell us why things like this actually hit you quite hard and why you're pushing them so much.
For me, it's a great way to be able to use my platform, not least of all because I grew up in a low-income household and this support wasn't available to us. There wasn't such things accessible. If there were, things would have been very different. And it's also having a better understanding of what I actually went through now and what my family went through, what I saw growing up. Because obviously, as a kid, I didn't understand. It was an incredibly stressful environment. You know, my nan was always stressed, and I understand why now. Her sleep was impacted by having to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to get in a van with her governor and the other staff to go and clean the banks up the Strand, to then go to Percy Ingle to work, in between sometimes taking me to school, and then going on to clean houses in Stamford Hill in the afternoon, coming home incredibly stressed and tired and harshly upset. Her mental health was impacted, and my upbringing was impacted because of that. And there's so many kids that are growing up in similar households now. Yeah. who are being impacted by these very things. This is really brought to the attention of everyone at the moment, but these problems have been going on since I was growing up and obviously before.
It's really interesting you mentioned children. So of the people that we support, all the charities and the grant support, over a third of those are single-parent families.
Right.
Really shocking.
Yeah. And Jessica, it's great that it could perhaps be used almost as sort of an educational tool in a way, you know, to teach all generations, especially the younger ones, about the cost crisis and stuff like that. As Stephen said, you know, when he was younger and when I was younger, it wasn't really an issue, you know, everything was provided for us, however hard it was for our parents or our grandparents. My nan brought me up as well. I know this might be an obvious question, but is it a move to bring it out now with the winter approaching, the colder weather coming?
So we've been around since 2004, so we have
wow.
our 20th anniversary next year, so
oh,
we've
wow.
been doing
That's
this
fabulous.
For a long time.
Yeah.
This is our third pilot we've been working on together,
yes.
and it's been, last year, 25,000 people were helped, so this
wow.
is really important.
Yeah,
that is amazing.
And the thing is, it's improving outcomes for people, right? This is really, really making a difference, which
yeah.
makes me incredibly proud to be a part of something that is genuinely helping people. And I think it is doing that by, as Jessica mentioned, by working with charities that already exist in these communities, because that gives it a real chance. People understand who's in need, what they need, how to communicate with them. And there's a level of trust that's already been built up that wouldn't otherwise be there, which allows people to have, I guess, the security to feel safe enough to access
yeah.
support.
And it must be, like, as you said, rewarding when you can actually see people being helped rather than, and this is no disrespect to any other charity, perhaps donating over the phone and not really knowing, if that makes sense. You know, it must be nice to see it with your eyes and how people are getting helped by it.
Yeah, to have actually had conversations with people who have accessed the fund and to understand how it's improved their outcome and what
yeah.
their situation is now, months and months, you know, since they've had help from the British Gas Energy Trust, and the
yeah.
fact that they've not fallen back into arrears, that they're feeling much more confident going into this winter.
And that's just going to help people's outlook, isn't it? Knowing that they are being considered as a person and not just an account number with a debt.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think that's so true. So this isn't just a one-off intervention, if you wanted to call it that. So the charities who are out there who are supporting through the British Gas Post Office pop-ups, they can provide support over weeks or months or what's needed for that individual to get back on their feet again.
So that's fabulous. How many people actually know that? Brilliant.
Well, hopefully a few more after they've heard this interview.
Yeah.
That's the idea.
Yeah, that is the plan. Jessica, just so that people are aware, we're going to come on to the socials and how they can contact in a minute, because sadly we're coming to the end of the slot. How do people go about it? Do they actually have to do some research, phone up the local one and book appointments, or do it online, or can they just turn up to wherever it is located?
So go to britishgasenergytrust.org.uk, find out where the post office pop-up is near from you. As I said, there's 50 coming along. If there isn't one near you at the moment, keep an eye out, but also call one of the 45 other charities that we support who are all over the different regions. But also, if you've got energy debt and you've opened that bill and you're worried about it, apply for a debt write-off grant, which we've got funds also open.
Brilliant, thank you. And so that everybody knows, where can they access all this information? I know you said about the website yourself. Where else can they go?
Honestly, the best place to head to is www.britishgasenergytrust.org.uk, where all information lives.
That's fabulous. Guys, we have come to the end of our time slot. I'm really sorry. It's been a pleasure again, Stephen, and to meet you, Jessica. Thank you. We'll get something out there, and let's just hope that anything we can do, if it can help one extra person, that's great. Appreciate your time and everything you're doing for it.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Take
guys.
Care. See you later,
Take
nice
care.
To see you again. Bye.
Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living. We've been doing this for over 40 years. Every year, more and more people are living satisfying lives completely cruelty-free. Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the The station that makes you feel good.
We finish off this week's show with our famous SLB Sports Roundup, featuring golf, horse racing, cricket, rugby, motorsport, NFL and football. We start with golf and the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour aligned for the Ryder Cup, the biggest team event in sport, at the Marco Simeone golf course in Rome, and it was won by Europe. Last weekend we had a draw between Europe and America in the Ladies Solheim Cup. This week it was a demolition by the European team, 16.5, 11.5, over the 3 days to regain the Ryder Cup. Brilliant from everybody. Rory McIlroy, 4 points. Victor Hovland and Tyrrell Hatton, 3.5. John Rahm, 3. For the Americans, well, Max Homer was their best player. He got 3 points. Patrick Cantlay and Brian Harman, 2 points. It was a demolition job on day one by Europe, who led 5.5. And then they continued to extend their lead, and they led by 5 points going into the final of the singles. At one point, it looked tight, but the Europeans at the back of the field done the job. Next Ryder Cup is in 2025, from the 26th to the 28th of September at Best Page Black in New York. The PGA Tour goes back to normal competition this week with the Sand Farms Classic from the Country Club of Jackson in Mississippi. The DP World Tour hosts the Alfred Dunhill Lynx Championship at the good old famous St Andrews. And the LPGA is back with the Ascendant LPGA, benefiting volunteers of USA from the Old American Golf Club in Texas. Horse racing, it was one of the biggest weekends of the year in Europe. We held the Arc de Triomphe meeting from Longchamp. The Prix de Cadran, which was run on Saturday, was won by our good friend Holly Doyle on that good old stage of Trushan, something that we tipped up for you. The Marcel Boussac was won in fine style by opera singer for Aidan O'Brien and Ryan Moore. And then we come into our own with our selections. We gave you the 1-2 in the Arc, the big race, Ace Impact winning from Westover. The Prix de l'Opera was won by Bru Rose Cien. Highfield Prince took the Prix de l'Abbé, and the Prix de la Forêt just stopped us getting a full house, where Kinross, despite being balked in his run, finished half a length second to Kalina. At Newmarket last week, it was the Cambridgeshire meeting. We unfortunately could only finish second with Greek Order, and the race was won by big outsider Astro King. The Cheveley Park, we thought Relief Rally with him, well, she was a non-runner, and it was won by Porta Ventura. But we got the Middle Park right with the Flying Machine Van Dijk. This week there's a big race to look out for, the Sun Chariot, where we expect Inspiral to win as one of the sign-offs for Frankie Dettori. And then the following weekend it's the Phyllis Mile and the Dewhurst, two of the big two-year-old races of the season. We like Fallen Angel and Opera Singer if she takes her chance in the Phyllis Mile. And in the Dewhurst, City of Troy or Van Dijk, whichever one takes their chance. The Cricket World Cup starts this week with England having the opening match against the team they beat in the final in the 2019 World Cup, New Zealand. We fancy England, the team they've got are amazing, but on those spinning pitches of India, you have to throw in the hosts. However, they do have a habit of not playing their best under pressure. And then you've got to have Australia and Pakistan. Australia for the depth and their history, and Pakistan for their ability to beat anybody on their day and on those spinning wickets. The Rugby World Cup is in full swing. Pool A is headed by France, they're 3-3, followed by New Zealand and Italy to battle it out, they're 2-3. Pool B, Ireland are 3-3 with South Africa and Scotland chasing them down. Pool C, Wales are also 3-3 with Fiji and Australia on 2-3. And then finally it's England, who lead Pool D, 3-3. Argentina and Japan are following them. On to motorsport, and we start on two wheels with the MotoGP, the Japanese Grand Prix, from the Twin Wing Motegi. It was won by Jorge Martin for Ducati Pramac Racing. He beat current champion Frankie Bagnaia, also the Ducati for the Lenovo team, and Marc Marquez made a welcome return back to the podium for the Repsol Honda team. Frankie Bagnaia still leads the standings on 319 points, but the gap is now down to just 3. From Jorge Martin closing down on 316, with Marco Bezzecchi also on a Ducati for the Valentino Rossi 46 team, back in third on 265. Next is the Indonesian Grand Prix from the Mandalika International Street Circuit. World Superbikes held round 11 with the Pirelli Portuguese round from the Autodromo International Circuit in the Algarve. And all three races were won by Alvaro Bautista, back to form on his Ducati Aruba IT machine,
Second place was taken by Top Rat Razzaglioglu in all three races on the Pata Yamaha. However, there was a different bronze medalist at each race. In race one, it was Jonathan Rea on the Kawasaki. The sprint race was Andrea Locatelli on the Pata Yamaha. And race two was Michael Ruben Rinaldi on the Ducati Aruba IT machine. Well, with just one round to go, Alvaro Bautista has extended his lead to 60 points. He's on 566. Top Rat Razzaglioglu is on 506. And Jonathan Rea is on 350. It's going to be incredibly difficult for Top Rat to win the title. There's 62 points available from the last round with two full races and a sprint, and the gap is 60. So it looks like Alvaro will complete his championship win next time round, which is a whole month away, the 27th to the 29th of October, where it's being held at the Circuit de Jerez in Spain with the Spanish round. British Superbikes are also back with round 10 and races 28, 29 and 30 from Donington Park using the Grand Prix circuit. The sprint race was won by Ryan Vickers for the OMG Racing Yamaha team. Leon Haslam was second for the Rokit BMW Motorrad team. And Luke Mossy was third for the Lloyd and James BMW side. Race 2 was won by Kyle Ride on the OMG Racing Yamaha, with Leon Haslam again taking the silver medal, trying to get that win. And third place was Christian Iden for the Oxford Products Racing Ducati team. Race 3 was won by Jason O'Halloran, the McCams Yamaha team. Second place, Christian Iden. And third place was Josh Brooks for the FHO Racing BMW Motorrad team. The standings are still led by the two big Bonts Ducati team riders. Tommy Bridewell is in front on 368, 7.5 points clear of Glenn Irwin, his teammate. Third place, Kyle Ride, OMG Racing Yamaha on 333, just 35 back from the lead. The next round, which again is the final round of the season, is the 13th to the 15th of October from Brands Hatch using the Grand Prix circuit. Speedway Grand Prix had their final round last weekend, round 10, from Toruń, the Polish Grand Prix. And after the controversy of the Voyens' disqualification of Bartosz Maldyk because he wore the wrong race suit in qualifying, he was back with the pressure on him on his home track, trying to become a four-time world champion with a gap just 6. Well, he didn't only win the championship, he won the meeting in fine style, beating the number 2 in the world, Freddy Lindgren. In the final was Leon Madsen, back in third. That left the final standings with Bartosz Szmarzyk on 158, 8 points clear in the final standings of Freddy Lindgren. And third place was his Polish teammate Martin Vakulik on 125. So Bartosz Szmarzyk becomes the four-time World Speedway champion. On to four wheels and NASCAR, who are still in the round of 12 with the Yellowwood 500 from Talladega Super Speedway. And it was won by Ryan Blaney in his Ford Mustang for Team Penske. Second place, William Byron, Chevy Camaro of Hendrix Motorsport. And third place, Denny Hamlin, Toyota Camry for Joe Gibbs Racing. William Byron leads the way in the round of 12, 3-1-3-6, 28 points clear now, Denny Hamlin, with Christopher Bell driving a Toyota Camry for Joe Gibbs Racing on 3-0-8-0. This week it's the Bank of America Royal 500 from Charlotte Motor Speedway using the road course. F1 is back this week with their next Grand Prix, the Qatar Grand Prix from the Lazzali International Circuit, with Max Verstappen of Red Bull leading the way. On to NFL and week 4 results. Packers 20, Lions 34, Jaguars 23, Falcons 7, Colts 23, Rams 29, Browns 3, Ravens 28, Panthers 13, Vikings 21, Titans 27, Bengals 3, Saints 9, Bucks 26, Bills 48, Dolphins 20, Bears 28, Broncos 31, Denver, Eagles 34, Commanders 31, Texans 30, Steelers 6, Chargers 24, Raiders 17, 49ers 35, Cardinals 16, Cowboys 38, Patriots 3, Jets 20, Chiefs 23. A result to come next week, Giants versus the Seahawks. Well, the divisions are spacing out quite nicely. In the AFC, the East, the West and the North are being led by the Bills and the Dolphins, the Chiefs and the Ravens respectively, all on 3-1. Whereas, something strange, in the South, where the Colts, the Texans, the Titans and the Jaguars, all four teams, are all tied on 2-2. In the NFC, the Eagles are 4-0. Unbeaten, as are the 49ers in the West. The South is being led by the Lions 3-1, and also in the East, there's another 4-0, where the Tampa Bay Buccaneers lead the way. Two teams in the NFC, the Bears and the Panthers, are both 0-4. Week 5 fixtures: Commanders versus the Bears, Bills versus the Jaguars, Patriots versus the Saints, Colts versus the Titans, Steelers versus the Ravens, Lions versus the Panthers, Falcons versus the Texans, Dolphins versus the Giants, Cardinals versus the Bengals, Rams versus the Eagles, Broncos versus the Jets, Vikings versus the Chiefs, 49ers versus the Cowboys, and Raiders versus the Packers. We finish with football and the Premier League Match Day 7 results. Aston Villa 6, Brighton 1. Manchester United 0, Crystal Palace 1. Newcastle 2, Burnley 0. Wolves 2, Manchester City 1. Bournemouth 0, Arsenal 4. West Ham 2, Sheffield United 0. Everton 1, Luton 2, Tottenham 2, Liverpool 1, Nottingham Forest 1, Brentford 1. Fulham versus Chelsea, it'll be a result next week. The top three in the league see Manchester City finally dropping their first points, played 7 with 18 points. Joint second, after having played 7 on 17 points, are Tottenham and Arsenal, both with the same goal difference, but Tottenham are second, having scored more goals. A catch-up match in the midweek is Luton versus Burnley, and then week 8 fixtures. Luton versus Tottenham, Fulham versus Sheffield United, Burnley versus Chelsea, Manchester United versus Brentford, Everton versus Bournemouth, Crystal Palace versus Nottingham Forest, Brighton versus Liverpool, West Ham versus Newcastle, Wolves versus Aston Villa, and Arsenal versus Manchester City. Well, the Women's Premier League, the WSL, was back last weekend. Week 1's results. Aston Villa 1, Manchester United 2, Everton 1, Brighton 2, Bristol City 2, Leicester 4, Arsenal 0, Liverpool 1, West Ham 0, Manchester City 2, and Chelsea beating Tottenham. Week 2's fixtures, Manchester United versus Arsenal, Brighton versus West Ham, Manchester City versus Chelsea, Tottenham versus Bristol City, Leicester versus Everton, and Liverpool versus Aston Villa. That's our SLB Sports Roundup. Well, everyone, I want to thank you for listening to another great show. It was a blockbuster. We had Zandara Kennedy, Chloe Chong, Julia Dalbart-Pusey, and then a great piece about a great cause from Professor Green and Julia Talbot. Please look at British Gas Energies UK for all the information. I want to thank you, the listeners, and Johan, Rafaela, and the whole team at UK Health Radio for giving us this amazing platform. We will see you all next week.